The European Commission is recommending today that Ukraine be formally considered for EU membership. President Volodymyr Zelensky said this move will bring Ukraine closer to victory in its fight against Russia. But the war is now concentrated in the Donbas region in the east, where Ukraine is fighting to keep Russia from seizing key cities. Let's check in now with Michael Kaufman, director of the Russia Studies Program at the research and analysis organization CNA. Michael, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on your program.
In the earliest weeks of this war, the Russian military did worse than expected. It struggled with logistical problems and supply problems, and it faced a fierce Ukrainian opposition. But then Russia changed its strategy. Tell us where we stand now in Ukraine, nearly 4 months into this war.
In the first phase of the war, the Russian military was trying to pursue a regime change operation, which proved to be a disastrous attempt. In the second phase, they are fighting much more in the way they train and organize the fight, but with a much depleted force. They lost a lot of manpower and a lot of their best equipment in the early weeks of the war. Now, the second phase has been a very brutal part of the conflict where it's become a war of attrition. The Russian military has an advantage, namely in firepower, artillery, and the use of air power and the like. The Russian military has made gains, but that being said, the Ukrainian military, it doesn't appear to be in any way on the verge of collapse. It is taking very heavy casualties, though, and it does appear to be running fairly low on ammunition.
So you say Russia has an advantage in firepower. Does it have an advantage in concentrating the fight in the east, in the Donbas?
Yeah, although the front is actually a very long line of contact, much of the fighting is concentrated in a fairly narrow pocket in the Donbas. Around these areas called Severodonetsk and Lysychansk, and also the Russian military is trying to set up a battle for the town of Slavyansk. And so they're mostly trying to pin down Ukrainian units. And Ukraine itself has been reinforcing the battle, trying to fight for every square inch of a city in an effort to exhaust the Russian military and slow down their advance.
So as Russia is pinning down these Ukrainian forces, if they gain control of the city of Severodonetsk in the Luhansk region, would that be a significant victory for Russia, which could happen, I guess, in the next few weeks?
It well could, and Severodonetsk appears to be at least partially cut off. I, for one, don't count this as a very significant victory. It represents very modest territorial progress towards even Russia's most minimalist goals, which is capturing the administrative territory of the Donbas. That said, the incremental gains in territory are not what matters. What matters is the state of the forces. Both of these armies are becoming exhausted. They're losing their best troops. They're losing their best equipment. And the war is likely to become more protracted. And that is a conflict more determined by who's likely to crack first and who's likely to suffer from extended exhaustion.
And what do you think is the answer to those questions?
I don't have an answer to those questions. One of the challenges early on in any war is trying to figure out where you actually are in the conflict. Beyond this current phase, it's quite likely there's going to be a substantial operational pause. Those both armies are going to need time to rearm, to refit. And then we're likely to see a new set of offensives, at least from the Ukrainian side, perhaps some months down the line.
You say that what matters most now is the state of the forces. U.S. General Mark Milley, chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff, supports sending more weapons and security aid to Ukraine because right now he said that the numbers clearly favor the Russians. Are these weapons getting to Ukraine fast enough? What more needs to be done?
Well, I think they're getting to Ukraine as fast as they can get there. May not be getting there fast enough, but it takes time to train soldiers, particularly of a very different army, to use equipment and most importantly, to maintain it. Unfortunately, it's not very easy to convert the Ukrainian military from using Soviet-type artillery and munitions into NATO-standard equipment and NATO-standard ammunition. It's not for a lack of keenness or Ukrainian military's inability to learn quickly. It's just there are all sorts of growing pains with making this kind of dramatic transition in the middle of a large conventional war.
I think I hear you saying that Ukraine is holding its own at this point, but it seems to me that there's a different picture of this war emerging, one that's not so carefully presented on social media, one that's more honest about the real challenges that Ukraine is facing moving forward. Do you see that as well, Michael?
Ukraine's position is quite tenuous. Yes, it is holding, but in wars of attrition, armies give way gradually and then perhaps very suddenly. And so you're not likely to see dramatic territorial shifts because this is not a war defined by maneuver. Neither side has the forces to make dramatic breakthroughs, but they are depleting each other's capabilities, and you're seeing both sides fight increasingly with mobilized personnel, with reservists, with lower quality troops. And so it is a question of, you know, whether or not Ukraine will be able to exhaust the Russian offensive before the Russian military is able to make any substantial gains.
Ukraine depends right now so much on financial and military support from the United States and the West. Is that a weakness to your mind if this war continues for a long time and if the U.S. can't provide so substantially for the long term?
Ukraine, in some respects, enjoys a long-term advantage because it has the manpower, and the Russian military has huge problems given the losses they've had and the structure of their force. But those assessments very heavily depend on the assumption that there will be sustained military aid from the United States and from other European countries, which assumes that they have military aid to give. Many European countries have already exhausted their stocks.
Yeah.
And that they have the actual political will to send these weapons, which is a different matter altogether.
And what about Russia then? Putin has not declared a full war here. Are there enough soldiers, enough weapons, enough money to keep pouring into this war, especially as tougher sanctions against Russia really start to kick in?
It's a great question. The Russian military was really optimized for a short, sharp war with NATO. It's not really designed for this kind of conflict. And Putin's attempted to fight this war with the Russian military at what we call peacetime strength. That is, he's not conducted any sort of mobilization to really raise the manning levels. Essentially, they've been kicking the can down the road when it comes to the hard political decisions for how Russia is going to actually sustain this war. Right now, the Russian military has bought itself some time in staying power in the battlefield, but they too have very fundamental questions that they will have to answer if this becomes a protracted conflict, especially if there is substantial Western military assistance to Ukraine moving forward.
A U.S. Pentagon official said this week that the United States will not pressure Ukraine to enter peace talks with Russia. But is there any sense of what Russia demands at this point and what Ukraine is willing to accept and what concessions they might be prepared to make? Michael, what do you think?
I think right now there's no good overlap between the demands of the two sides. Russia said that it wants to seize the Donbas, and probably it's going to try to annex it if it does. But that represents only Russia's most minimal war aims. If there's any prospect for a settlement, they would demand very significant political concessions from Ukraine, such as neutrality, which would really limit Ukraine's sovereignty. I don't think any Ukrainian leader is in a position at this point politically to give these kind of concessions. And on the Ukrainian side, Ukraine has stated that they want to, at the very least, take back territory to February 24th lines, right, when this iteration of the conflict really began. But these are also interim goals. Ukraine's real objectives, probably at a minimum, are to take back all of the Donbas as well and most of the territory they've lost since 2014. So it's clear that there is no going back in this conflict to where the battle lines were starting in February.
No going back, and I think I hear you saying we can expect some operational pauses, but really this is a long, protracted war.
I think so, and folks should be careful with declaring sort of stalemates or frozen conflict, which is very tempting whenever there is an operational pause, but more than likely we're going to see cycles of conventional operations and then what appear to be significant pauses, and I suspect at the very least it'll last into next year, although I'm not willing to stick very hard behind that prediction because that's one of the few things that's the hardest to speculate about.
Michael Kaufman is director of the Russia Studies Program at the research and analysis organization CNA. Michael, thank you very much for your perspective.
Thanks for having me on your program.